Hi, this is Women's Soccer Zone editor Kieran Tavam. As always, thank you very much for downloading our podcast. This is just a really quick note before we actually go into what is our 50th episode of WOSO Zone. JJ Duke, my deputy editor, and myself did record this episode a few days ago before we had issues with our Euro guide and not being able to make it public as and when planned this week. So apologies that there is talk of the guide and the fact that it's been released when actually it hasn't already. Thank you so much for your patience. We are working to try and get the issue rectified, and we're hoping to be able to release our Euro guide the beginning of next week. It really is worth the wait, guys. I do apologize again that we've had this issue, but I hope that you'll, when you get to download it, you'll see that a lot of work's gone into it and it'll be worth the wait. So thanks again for downloading. Enjoy episode 50 of Women's Soccer Zone, and I will catch up with you very, very soon. Hello and welcome to a very special edition of Women's Soccer Zone, because it is the 50th podcast that we've recorded since rebranding from the Women's Football Podcast. Of course, we've been going for over 4 years, but a couple of years ago we did give the podcast maybe a little bit of a fresh look and rebranded it as Women's Soccer Zone, and this is the 50th episode. And of course, as always, my name is Kieran Tavam, and I'm joined by my colleague across the pond, deputy editor for WOSO Zone, JJ Duke. JJ, how are you, mate?
Kieran, it's good to be back. It's been a little bit of a while.
It has, yeah. We've been quite busy, haven't we? And I think we want to do things a little bit differently on this show because it is the 50th edition. We've got an interview to come at the end of the show with one of the players who's in tremendous form at the moment. JJ, you had a chance to speak to Sky Blue FC Samantha Kerr, and for the second half of this show we're going to cover the NWSL, but we're going to have a very special guest to help us do that, and we will keep that person quiet until we actually introduce her a little bit later on. But for the first half, we're going to talk about the upcoming Women's European Championships, because they do of course kick off next week, the 16th of July. So JJ and I are going to have a little bit of a chat about that. So we'll have a quick break and then we will get cracking after this.
Women's Soccer Zone. Follow the show on Twitter at WOSO Zone.
So welcome back. JJ, as I mentioned in the intro, Women's European Championships have arrived. They are kicking off next week in the Netherlands. Norway against the Netherlands is the opening game of the tournament. Sure to be a cracking one in Utrecht. We have been quite busy in the lead up to these championships. Would you like to explain why?
Well, I mean, you know, first off, this episode's coming out very shortly after we've released our European Championship guide. I mean, 131 pages titled The Battle Begins, which I think is very very eloquent, if you ask me, because the last tournament that we saw just seems like yesterday, but it was only 4 years ago, that it was a very tight competition. There wasn't a whole lot of matches that were one-sided. Everybody gave a real good showing of themselves. And now at the expanded tournament, you expect that there's going to be an expanded amount of coverage. And I think we really delivered that. And, you know, humbly, I will say, Kieran, you did a phenomenal job in overseeing this. I know you're always going to deflect to say that this is a team effort, but mate, you put this one together. It was an idea that you had a long time ago, and I think that this has come out exactly how you would have wanted, and if not, maybe even a little bit better.
Oh, I mean, look, this isn't going to be about blowing our own trumpet. I think, you know, when we released the guide yesterday, I think when I saw the finished product, and I have to give a huge shout out to Anno Dong, who is going to be helping Women's Soccer Zone out during the Euros with our coverage, but of course is better known for being the founder and editor of the Women's Game down in Australia. Anne came on board with the idea very early on, because Anne had done these guides before. She did a World Cup one that I was involved with for 2015, and she knew exactly how it would work. She knew how she wanted to lay it out. She is the one who's done all the design work. So anyone who has any compliments to make about the actual look of the guide, that is all Anne. I can take no credit for that. But it was a phenomenal project to work on, and what I'm really pleased about is that we've got to showcase the work of some individuals who maybe aren't that well known in the women's game. You know, there are people in there who haven't maybe had the chance to showcase their work. There are some in there who people will be familiar with. But I think what we managed to do is we got individuals from their respective regions, didn't we? Or certainly who had a knowledge of their own nation. You know, people like Bea Redondo, who's based actually here in London, but knows her Spanish football inside out. People like Jasmina, who wrote about Germany. You know, there are, and there are individuals like, you know, like you and me, who wrote about countries that we're not familiar with, or not as familiar with, maybe. You know, Sophie Lawson, who writes for Vavel, did some brilliant pieces on Austria and Switzerland for us. So it's really difficult to kind of pick individuals out, but you're right, I am going to deflect it. It's a team effort, and we very much couldn't have done it without everyone involved.
Oh yeah, no, for sure. And I love the fact that we have voices from all over, because as you and I have said before on these episodes, that, you know, it takes a lot of time and a lot of research just to cover the little bit that we do. Obviously on these shows we base a lot on the American League, you know, the league in England, the Champions League, and, you know, maybe gloss over you know, some of the other action going on. But let's face it, we needed other people to give their insight. And, you know, you and I were talking before we came on to air about, you know, looking through some of these pieces. And I mean, you know, half of the thing, you know, I felt like I had a decent knowledge about, you know, the 16 nations that were in this tournament. But boy, I think that knowledge is just only increased, and by many folds increased, just because of reading some of the work that these writers have, you know, provided for all of you. And I think that's going to be the important part in all of this. This is a guide, you know, not only, yes, it's an opportunity for us to, you know, write about this tournament, write about a sport that we love so much, but it's for the listeners of our, you know, of our brand and the readers of our brand to really now, this is a guide that you'll be thumbing through from day one until the championship. And really, you might pick up something new every day, or you might even look back at one of our feature interviews that we have, and then you see a match coming on, and, you know, maybe a commentator might mention something and be like, oh yeah, you know, I read that a couple of days ago in the Women's Soccer Zone Euro Guide.
Yeah, and that's very much it. It's been about educating maybe those that are new to the game, and making sure that those who know it inside out maybe learn one or two things along the way. And what I will say is that these are not just features on teams that we've written about. There are the views of the players as well. We have interviews with a number of individuals from across the 16 teams. We haven't been able to get players from all of them, unfortunately. Time ran away with us, but, you know, we've got players from England and Norway and the host, the Netherlands. And, you know, I really do implore people to visit womenssoccerzone.com, visit our Twitter handle at WOSOZone. All the details are on there. Legends interview with Nadine Anger, of course, won multiple European championships. But as I said, I didn't want this to be about blowing our own trumpet. I didn't want this to be a massive sales pitch, although it has started that way, so I apologise. But I guess where I want to go with this, JJ, is we haven't really expressed our views in the guide. And I guess what I'm interested to know from your side is, what's kind of the key thing for you that you're looking forward to in the Euros? And I guess, who do you think could be the standout, let's say your standout player?
Well, look, I mean, you know, I mentioned the last tournament, it was super tight. There wasn't a whole lot really to separate a lot of those teams. Obviously, we had the 12-team format, so we had the best third-place finishers move on, as we saw in the last couple of Olympic tournaments. But 16 teams, you know, you finish one or two, you go home. A lot of analysis can go into this about, you know, how teams can match up against each other and who's going to exploit what weakness on a given day. But it's as simple as this. You have to survive the group stage. And if you can do that, then it can only either help or hurt your chances depending on where you finish. I mean, I think when we originally, you know, discussed the group outlook when the draw came out, you and I circled Group A as that possible trouble group, because you have the host nation, the Netherlands, Norway, who you and I are both very high on. Denmark was the surprise package of the last tournament, stunning France in penalty kicks and nearly getting to the final as well. And Belgium, a team on the rise. And, you know, that group, ironically enough, as tough as it is, it only gets tougher once you get to the knockout stage, because you're either going to be playing, if you win that group, the runner-up of the group that involves Germany or Sweden, or if you're the runner-up, you face the winner of that group. So I have a feeling, as painful as it is to say, the winner isn't going to come from Group A, just because they not only get the bad luck of the group draw, but they got the bad luck of the knockout draw.
You know, that's a really interesting point. I'll be honest, when I get these groups drawn, I don't look too far ahead as to who might play who. That is a really, really good point that you've made there. For the team that comes out of Group A, they not only have to play three very difficult games in their group, the thought of having to face Germany or Sweden in the next round, that's incredibly difficult, very, very difficult, and it's not going to be easy for any of those teams that are coming out of that top group. I agree with you. I find it the most difficult to call. I mean, I will say this, Belgium took an absolute thumping from Spain last week, 7-0. In fact, it was earlier this week. I mean, Spain, we can talk about them, obviously, in England's group, and we are skipping a couple of groups, I appreciate, but I've spoken to a few people in the game, mate, and a lot of people are tipping Spain as their outsiders, because not only are they showing some impressive form going into the Euros, they've managed to put these results together, they've left out some very high profile players in Sonia Bermudez and Veronica Boquete as well. I've got a few people backing them.
Yeah, it's a smart pick, isn't it? I mean, you look at the group that they're in right now, you take England off the board because they're not going to have a repeat of 2013. We can be almost very straightforward and say that's not going to happen, but I like their chances of advancing. And then, you know, they're going to be matched up with Group C. If they win, they're going to take on the second-place team, and vice versa. If they finish second, they'll take on the group leaders. And we all know the track history that France has once they get to an elimination portion of a competition. It's not very good. So, yeah, I can understand that. I'm not going to say that they're kind of going to be like the Denmark of this tournament, because I think Spain brings some different qualities that Denmark had in 2013. I liked what I saw from Spain in the World Cup a couple of years ago. Didn't really have much access to watch their qualifying matches, but they put together an extremely impressive run of form through qualifying. And as you said, the results are starting to come in. And, you know, those pre-tournament matches are very tricky, but the thing that you don't want to have is confidence crushing defeats, and that's what Belgium had, and that's only going to help Spain to carry on to this competition if you can build as you go along. And that's why, you know, when you take about international tournaments, why the U.S. have always been so good is because they build momentum throughout the tournament, and once the time comes for somebody to step up in a late knockout stage or knockout match, they're going to find a way to do it. So I think Spain right now, yeah, they're tracking very positively.
Yeah. Looking very, very good. We should stay in that group scene as we've skipped to it. You mentioned England won't have a repeat of 2013. Had some good warm-up games in the lead-up to the championship. Most recently, got a good 2-1 win in Denmark through two goals from Ellen White. They, I think, have the squad that maybe they haven't had in the past. They have quality from back to front. And if things aren't going right for Mark Sampson, I think he has the depth to be able to bring players off the bench. He has game changers, doesn't he?
Yeah, he does. And there are a lot of people that were super critical about him announcing his team, what, 3.5 months prior to this tournament kicking off. But, you know, the man had his mind set. He knew the exact group of players that he wants. And I like how you said back to front, there's no real holes. I think this team, especially attacking wise, this might be the deepest group that they've had maybe ever, barring, of course, 2015, but we're still really in that same cycle. I mean, you know, they list the six forwards, Kaz Kearney, Tony Duggan, Fran Kirby, Nikita Paris, Jody Taylor, and Ellen White. I mean, there's not too many holes, and if you needed to call on somebody, they're gonna step up. They're gonna find a way to score a key goal or two, and that's what they were missing in that last tournament. They didn't really have a killer punch up front, and when you can't score goals, it's not gonna really help you, because if you give up one in every match, you're going home empty-handed.
Yeah, without a doubt. Scotland announced their squad, and as we suspected, Kim Little not fit enough to make the squad. Massive blow for them, but even bigger blow, well, not even bigger, but equally so in terms of her importance in her position. Jem Beattie ruled out as well because of an ankle injury. To lose two experienced heads like that, who would have, I think, almost certainly would have started every game in this competition, bitter blow for Scotland, isn't it, to lose Jem Beattie and Kim Little?
I mean, if you're just talking about Kim Little not being available for a tournament, that's as big of a knock as you're going to get. She's really one of the best players in the world and has sustained that form for quite some time right now. And, you know, you want experienced heads. Now, granted, this is their tournament debut, but Kim Little played in the London Olympics. She's been on the biggest stages before, played, you know, very successful club career. And when you don't have that head in the lineup, you're going to be losing a lot. So, yeah, no, I mean, it's going to be challenging for them. But, again, if anything, this was probably the group that Scotland would have liked to have had. Maybe Group C as a small consolation could have been a little bit weaker. But, yeah, that's going to be a tough one when you're talking about the rise of Spain right now and Scotland having some issues just in terms of health. It's a tough draw. They're going to need to get something out of that first game, and it's not going to be easy, of course, because you know, when you're facing your border rival, you have to be up for it. And if you're not up, that form just continues straight through the end.
We mentioned how people are tipping Spain as potential outsiders. Whether you class them as outsiders or not, I guess, is up to an individual. You mentioned there very briefly Group C. France are the other team that people are talking about very positively, mainly, I think, because they finally overcame, albeit not a major tournament in any shape or form, but winning the She Believes Cup earlier this year showed that they are capable of overcoming those mental challenges against the biggest teams. Are we looking at Group C as Austria, Switzerland and Iceland playing for second place?
Yep, 100%. I think the Swiss, we know what they're about. Obviously, it's Ramona Bachmann leading the way. We saw them have great glimpses and flashes during the World Cup. Iceland, as we know, it's a great time for them. Country is developing head above heels. Men's program, obviously, having a great run in the men's European Championships last year. The women qualifying, they're in and around right now. If there's somebody to pick out of that group of three to finish second, I think it's probably Iceland, just on current form and nothing more. But yeah, you said it right. France, they're the team that's always going to be the traditional power. They're going to find a way to use that, that monster that they have up front, led by Lise Sommer. She will make an impact on this tournament. The only thing that just concerns me is, you know, that those ghosts from the past, because you said about the She Believes Cup, and rightly so, it's a good competition, but it's not one that's, you know, FIFA classified as competitive. You're going to have to find a way to get some results in a tournament like this to kind of shake off what has happened in the past. And if they can get through the group in the quarterfinals, then definitely you tab them as a team that could win it. But you almost, it's funny to say, because you're asking for a prediction after four matches. They might not even get to that fourth match, but that's kind of really how I see it for them. They could be a tournament winner, or we could see them, as it has been for the last couple of major tournaments, just down and out early.
Yeah, I'm interested. I'm not quite sure it's as clear-cut, because as you've said, France, talent-wise, I think probably the most talented team in the whole competition from back to front. We talked about England's depth. France maybe don't have what I would describe as the depth that England have in terms of experience, but I tell you what, the talent that they have from 1 to 11 and a few others that they can bring off the bench, unbelievable, absolutely unbelievable. I tell you what, like you mentioned, Switzerland, decent side on their day, can create problems. I'm looking forward to seeing Iceland, mate. I had the opportunity to speak to Dagny Brynjarsdóttir, who is in our Euros guide, so if people haven't had a read of that, definitely recommend having a quick flick of that. She and her teammates are up for it, mate, because they know that there is very little expected of them. I've spoken to their head coach, Freyr Alexandersson, a few times in the past, and I know that he's up for it. They're really looking to kind of encapsulate the interest of the fans back at home after what the men did at Euro 2016 last year. I think they could be, I'm not saying they're going to win it, but I'm excited to see what they can produce.
Well, I love the sub-headline of Dagny's interview, "We're ready to show Europe how good we are." And I think that is kind of, it's a statement. It's not even kind of, it's a statement saying that they know that they're a team that could fight for a last four spot. They could get to the semifinals. And, you know, we've seen these players, we've seen this team before compete in this tournament, but never really fully flexing their muscles. But as I said earlier, this program is one that's on the rise. It's taken years to happen, but they've got great support from the Federation, which at times that's all that you might need is just a solid backing. And we've seen that at the club level for a variety of different teams move up into that elite tier. And now you have Iceland poised to make that move. And I think that this could be their tournament, you know, depending on how well they do in the early group stage matches, will set the tone. But if they can get a confident result early on, the sky's the limit.
Yeah, for sure. And we shouldn't leave out Austria. Of course, they will be the underdogs in that group. But I think one of the key things and one of the common trends of when speaking to the players for the Euros guide and actually speaking to players that maybe aren't in the guide but that I've come across on social media or just at a game or whatever, they all say when you come into the Euros, you have to be at it from the first game. There are no dead rubbers. There are no dead certs. You know, with the absolute greatest respect, we go into the World Cup. We saw some big score lines. You know, Germany overcoming, I think it was the Ivory Coast by quite a big score line. And we saw some teams in that competition take some real beatings. That is very unlikely to happen in this European Championships. And that is a testament to the quality of the sides that make up the 16 teams. And, you know, we'll very quickly do Group B as well, mate, because we need to move on to the NWSL and bring on our special guest. But, I mean, look, Germany, Italy, Russia, Sweden. It goes without saying that Germany will be overwhelming favourites to come out on top in that group. There's a rematch of the Rio 2016 Olympic final against Sweden. You know, Italy and Russia will be no pushovers. They will fancy their chances of picking up points off of each other and potentially causing an upset against one of those two big sides. But I think this is arguably probably the most clear-cut one in terms of who your top two are going to be.
Yeah, I mean, you know, there's always a saying you can't bet against the Germans in an international competition. There's a reason for, I think, the last three major tournaments. I've picked Germany to win just because they have the pedigree and they know how to get the job done when the time calls for it. I think that, you know, did they have a couple of players not make the team due to injuries that could have been impactful? Absolutely. But they have that next player up mentality. And it doesn't matter if it's a player that's performing well at the club level, it's a player that's coming through the youth ranks, they're going to find a way to get the job done. And the same goes for Sweden as well. Obviously, they're going to have a lot of confidence from that run in the Olympics. They had their backs to the wall on multiple occasions, but they found a way to persevere and podium. So, yeah, those two are going to be battling each other. And again, as I said earlier, positioning in the knockout stage is key. Yeah. A little advantage winning your group as opposed to finishing second, but still, you get through that quarterfinal and you have at least a 50% chance of getting to the final. I know it's elementary, but it's true.
Yeah, for sure. I think I'm looking forward to that Germany-Sweden game. That's going to be a hell of a classic, and you know, rekindling that relationship that they had from the Rio Olympics last year. Opportunity for Sweden to gain a little bit of revenge after they surprised a lot of people getting to the final. Very, very defensively sound after that drubbing that they got against Brazil in the opening game. I imagine they will set up very similarly and will probably build from the back. Russia and Italy, it's difficult, isn't it? Italy had a couple of decent performances. They actually played quite well against England in a friendly recently. They had a very poor Cyprus Cup. They did not perform well at all in that. And Russia, never really know what you're going to get with Russia. They're the sort of team that, you know, they can pull off surprise results. They've left out a couple of experienced individuals. We actually had, we managed to find a writer based down in Russia who follows the team, and he has written a piece for our Euros guide. So it's worth having a read of that if you don't know much about Russia. I certainly learned about Russia because I do not claim to know everything, and certainly did learn some bits about the team. But I think that one's maybe a little bit more clear cut, isn't it, mate? Italy and Russia are going to be playing catch up.
Yeah, for sure, 100%.
Okay, so very quick one. Who's your player to watch out for in this tournament? One player, one name.
Man, that's always a tough one, isn't it? You know what? Izzy Christensen from England. She's been getting on really well at City. I think her form's just only improved. I might have just stolen your pick from you, and I do apologize for that. But, you know, there are times when players that are just on the cusp of breaking out to being superstars for your own national team that show up in major international tournaments, and I think 2017 is going to be the year of Izzy.
Interesting pick, mate. Interesting pick. Big fan of Izzy. Spoken to her a few times over the last year, and very mature head on her shoulders, and I think she's going to grow into that England squad more and more. Not sure how much time she's going to see on the field. Very big squad, as we've said, in terms of depth and quality, but I do hope to see Izzy get some minutes. I wasn't actually going to go with her, mate, although I can see why you have done. Like you, I've asked the question. I don't actually have an answer rehearsed in my head, so that's a really difficult one. I think I'm going to go with Anya Mittag. Actually picked her out in her interview in our guide, and I agree with her. I'm going to go with Lena Magul from Germany. Lena Magul, who once of Wolfsburg, now plays for Freiburg. I think she's a talent. I think we saw a glimpse of what she can do at the She Believes Cup, and I think she is the future of this German side. Jennifer Marajan rightfully gets a lot of praise, but I really do like Lena Magul. I think she is going to be a player that really impresses over the coming years, and I think she could be a big star of this tournament. So I think I'm going to go with her. Final one, who's going to win it?
As I said previously, you can never bet against Germany in a competition like this. I know it's going to be kind of a blah pick and an unpopular pick, but why move, and why move away from what's been working? So I'm going to pick Germany. Shocker.
All right. Well, I'm going to go France. I think this is the year they overcome that mental hurdle that we've seen them clatter into over previous competitions. I think they have the talent from back to front. I think for a few players, this is probably a now or never. Players perhaps like Camille Abelie. I think it's going to be their time, mate. I really, really do. And I think it will be very, very close, though. I think England have a chance. We mentioned Germany. I think the hosts will fancy their chances. Norway, there's so many. That's the great thing about this competition. Very, very strong. But as we've said all through this first half of the show, womenssoccerzone.com, at WOSOZone on Twitter, all the details of how to download our guide, lots of information, interviews, predictions, lots of stuff in there. So do go and download it. It's free. You don't even have to pay for it. So go and get it. So JJ, we're going to have a break. Come back, we're going to dial in our guest presenter, and then we're going to have a chat about the NWSL.
Women's Soccer Zone would like to thank our partners, She Kicks Magazine. Subscribe at shekicks.net for even more women's football.
Okay, welcome back to the second half of this edition of Women's Soccer Zone. Still with me is my deputy editor, JJ Duke. And we said at the beginning of the show we had a special guest to help us with our review of the NWSL. Joined by our columnist, Chicago Red Stars forward, Steph McCaffrey. Steph, how are you?
I'm good. How are you?
Yeah, we're good. JJ, I know that you wanted to have a few questions with Steph, but I am going to jump in first. And bearing in mind that we've just spent half an hour talking about the Women's Euros, Steph, bearing in mind that you're in the States and maybe you can be less biased, having not played in Europe at this stage, how much are you looking forward to the Euros? How much of it will you get to see? And if you had to pick a team to watch, who would it be?
I think it's great. I'm really looking forward to, honestly, I'll watch as much as my schedule physically allows. I think that it's a blessing anytime you get to watch some of the highest levels of women's soccer being played. And it will kind of just be great to get to watch some really good games without having any stake in it whatsoever. Because I think even, like, whenever the U.S. plays, like, I obviously am heavily biased towards them and want them to win, having played with a bunch of those girls and obviously being from here. So I think it will be great to watch high-level women's football instead, because I feel like all we get to watch for the most part on TV is men's and be kind of an impartial bystander and just get to see some really good soccer.
And if you had to pick a team to win or a team that you think might perform well, who would it be, based on maybe some of the teams that you've played against or that you've had a chance to speak to teammates about?
I think I know this is probably, like, I would say they're one of the favorites, but I think France plays a great brand of soccer. From back to front, they have superstars all over the field, so I think they're definitely a favorite. And then in terms of a team that I think could maybe do some damage is the Netherlands. I think that they have two, like, really good forwards up top that can change games, and I think that they've been getting better and better year after year. I think that in terms of, like, my cliche favorite to win would be France, and kind of my dark horse would be the Netherlands, just because I think that they've been getting better and better every year. And in, like, especially in Viv Medima, who, like, I've had been able to watch, they have a really special player and someone that can score goals, and that can always change games.
So Steph is with me, JJ, in predicting France. Just for your info, Steph, JJ has gone rather predictably with the holders, Germany. JJ, you want to jump in?
I mean, hey, I said it earlier on, why change when it's working? So I picked Germany. I think the last couple of major competitions, and this is coming from an American, so sorry about that, Steph, but I've got zero shame whatsoever. I mean, they play a great brand, but I love what you're saying about the Netherlands, though. I think, you know, they've got those players that can influence. At some times, you talked about Medima, where, you know, in the matches that she's played against the U.S., at times she almost kind of slips into a little bit of a quiet moment. You know, she's not going to make impacts for 10, 15, 20 minutes, but boy, when she gets going, she could very well be one of the best strikers in the world. And I think you're 100% right that she can influence a game from, you know, when she steps onto the field till final whistle.
Yeah, without question, of course, has recently joined Arsenal ladies. Arsenal fans will have the benefit of seeing her when the new season starts in September. Well, look, we've discussed the Euros at length, and the reason we've got Steph on is to talk about the NWSL. Steph, you're currently in Chicago. Well, actually, the day that this is being released, you are playing the Boston Breakers, a team that you will know very well, being that you're from Boston, went to Boston College. Tell us about that one. Tell us how special this game is for you, being that this is against one of your former sides.
Yeah, I'm really excited to go play. I think that my friends and family have always had kind of like the chance to watch me play game in and game out. And I think that it's been hard for them, and it's been hard for me too, coming here and having them only get to see me sporadically. So I'm really looking forward to the game in terms of that it will be really special to play in front of friends and family, like old times again. I think I've done a couple of interviews about this game, and they've asked me about kind of the rivalry aspect of playing my old team. And for me, it's not about that as much as I'm just excited to have the people closest to me get to see me play.
Well, one thing I'm curious about is, speaking from someone that, you know, very immersed in the sports world, especially the collegiate sports. Now, I know that women's soccer, they don't do a bean pot during the season. And for those who don't know what that is, it's an annual competition between the four major Division I Boston schools. But I'm curious, does any memories come back to you about playing at Harvard, whether it was college or with your time with the Breakers?
Yeah, well, it's funny you say that. We actually do a bean pot every spring.
Oh, really? Okay.
Yeah, they don't matter, but every spring we did play in the bean pot. And, yeah, I mean, whether it was I've played at Harvard, like, for BC against Harvard University. I've played there for the Breakers Academy. I've played there in club games, and I obviously played there for the Breakers. So I've played on that field in so many – this will be the fourth team I've played at Harvard at, fourth different team I've played at Harvard, like, wearing a different jersey, which is interesting. So the field, yeah, it obviously has a lot of history for me. Again, I'm looking forward to going back because, like, I have a lot of good memories there. So I think it will be fun for me to get to step on that field again.
I'm going to be honest, as the British guy here, I have no idea what you guys were talking about there. So thank you very much for filling me in as to what that actually meant. Because as soon as you asked that question, JJ, I had no idea what that was about. So thanks very much for educating me on that. Steph, I'm kind of interested to know, we see players traded in the NWSL quite often, and quite often players don't actually have a say in being traded. I spoke to Kaylee and Kyle a couple of months ago, and obviously she got moved around quite a lot during her time in the NWSL, to the point where I think she just kind of fell out of love with the league, and she certainly said that she had no plans to kind of come back to it. When you're traded away from a city that you're familiar with, is your home, a team that you've probably dreamed of playing for such a long time, when you're traded away and you're having to move elsewhere, how difficult is that? How has the transition been? I know you've been in Chicago for a little while now, but you mentioned the fact that your family and your friends can't see you as much as you would like. How difficult has it been, and how's the transition been?
I mean, it was difficult in the sense of moving away from them, but I've been pretty public with the fact until the Breakers that the trade was mutual, and it was something that I had asked for. I thought that I was getting too comfortable in my hometown, and I thought that to develop as a player, I needed to be pushed in a different environment, and I wanted to come to one of the best teams in the league, so day in and day out, I was being challenged. I mean, I kind of decided that playing in front of, like, having the comfort of my friends and family, they'll be there for my entire life. I have a small window of time to play professional soccer, and I need to push myself on and off the field and make a move.
And to go along, you know, pushing yourself towards something bigger and something greater, you're with a team in Chicago that's really enjoyed this nice kind of youth revolution. Now everybody, you know, maturing and developing their game at the same time, and they're also playoff, you know, perennial playoff contenders. So what has been the atmosphere like over the past 12 months or so that you've been in Chicago? And not to say the differences between them and Boston, but what have you enjoyed about being with a team that's always right there to, you know, make a big splash in the league?
I think there's two aspects of the Red Stars that I enjoy. It's one is that we obviously are, like, the expectation is, like, if we draw anything but 3 points is a disappointment. It's really nice to be on a team that, like, whether we're home against the bottom of the table or we're away to go play Seattle in a midweek game, there's no excuses, and the expectation is you come home with 3 points. Not to say it wasn't like that on other teams I've been on, just here, that every single day, it's not just Rory, but the culture of the team is that, like, anything but coming out on top is unacceptable. But at the same time, it's cool how even though we are, like, a contender to win not only, like, the championship but the Shield, and I think right now we're 1 point off first place, it still kind of has that, like, family feel. Obviously we're not an MLS team, we're not an MLS back team, we're one of, like, the smaller organizations, and I think Arnhem and Rory are kind of from the top down do a great job of making sure that in a big city and in a big league, the team feels like family, and it's a lot of fun. It's been a lot of fun to kind of travel around with them and be a part of something great.
I'm going to talk about some of the columns that you've written for us, because you've given us a little bit of a flavor as to what that family that you mentioned is like and the camaraderie that exists in the squad. But I'm interested to know, we've spoken about the game coming up against Boston. What's the best team, or what have you made of the standard of the league? We're in the fifth season of the NWSL. It's unprecedented. We've talked about it on this show a few times about how previous leagues in the United States have folded after a few years. We're in the fifth season of the NWSL. What's the major changes and differences that you've seen this year, Steph, compared to maybe some of the other years in the last couple of years that you've been in the league?
Yeah, I think that every year, with the influx of draft picks and internationals and stuff like that, every team's getting stronger, and there is no more easy games. I think in the past, there was a clear, like, separation of tiers of teams, and obviously now, like, there are some teams doing better than others in different runs of form and such, but for the most part, like, every game's a battle, and any team could win on their day. So it's super competitive, and I think that's what makes our league really special. I think other leagues around the world, they have great leagues with two super teams, whereas the NWSL has 10 strong teams that on their day, like, the bottom can beat the top, and that's making us all better, and it makes it more fun.
Yeah, I mean, you talked about that
separation, how it's really closed over the past couple of seasons. And you're a team, as I said before, that's always going to be right around the playoff position, team that's battling for spots. I'm curious, as an athlete, how much do you pay attention to the action going around the rest of the league right now? Now knowing that we're starting the second half of the season and it's very tight, like the top five spots, obviously four go to the playoffs. How much does a player and how much does a team actually really look and see what's happening elsewhere? Or is it really just that one game mentality? You're just looking forward to the next game. We can't control anything that's outside of our own element.
No, I mean, I would say that we're human. We're human and we're really competitive and we want not only to win a playoff spot, but to win the Shield. So the day of my game, I kind of shut down, and I think a lot of girls are like this. We shut down and we focus on getting the 3 points and doing everything that's in our control. But I mean, on Sunday, or say I play on a Sunday and teams are playing on Saturday, I'm an NWSL rat. I'm watching every game and analyzing all the scenarios and seeing what results are best for us and watching those games and whatnot. And I think while it's important not to get distracted with what's going on outside of you, knowing that you have a job to do in your own right, it also, I mean, I don't think it would be good if you were that disinterested that you were able to ignore the teams that are kind of gunning for the same thing that you want.
I'm interested. No, that's cool. Yeah, absolutely. I'm interested. We kind of mentioned about the standard of the league and the teams that you've played. Looking at where Chicago is now, what's the kind of feeling in the team? What's the feeling amongst the players in terms of what you've achieved so far this year and what you potentially can achieve? Because we look at the roster from back to front and the options that you have on the bench as well. This is a strong side, isn't it? And it's a team that really can achieve great things.
Yeah, I mean, for us, I think for me and for us, we want to win the Shield and we want to win the championship. And I think that, not to sound not in a sense that's greedy or arrogant, it's just that we, in my opinion, have the deepest roster in the league. We've shown that we can pick up points when we're exhausted. Away on the road, we've shown we can pick up 3 points when we're at home and fresh. We've beaten the first place team twice. I think that for us, it's well within our control to achieve both of those goals, and we want to set out and do it, and anything else would be a disappointment.
And looking at some of the wider topics that have been going on around the league, we saw, I'm interested to get a player's take on this, we saw the NWSL forced into a decision that would see some of the games on Lifetime moved cities, because we saw obviously Rachel Daly go down with heat exhaustion in a game in Houston about a month ago. I'm interested to know, you've mentioned there that we are in a position where we can get points even when we're exhausted. How have you found this season playing some of those earlier kickoffs with the NWSL being a summer league? Some of those games that you're playing on the East Coast must be pretty tough. And obviously, the kickoff times aren't necessarily helping that. And I'm not looking for you to say anything controversial, but I'm just kind of intrigued to know how it is from a player's perspective trying to deal with that.
Yeah, I think that, I mean, it's hot. Sometimes you step out there and you're like, wow, this is going to be a day, because it kind of just feels like the heat is slowly killing you. But I mean, we train really hard during the week, and it just means that you have to take that much better care of yourself. So that's the way I kind of, it's just like another hurdle and another challenge to deal with. I think that, it's hot for both teams, and both teams, by that same token, have every chance leading up to the game, before the game, and then after the game, recovering for the next week to take it as best care of yourself as you possibly can. And I think that if you kind of leave no stone unturned in that department, the heat will become less and less of a factor. So that's the way that I try to think about it, because I think it's really the only constructive way you can think about it. I mean, you can't change the weather, and there are obviously logistical hurdles with the league. There are some logistical hurdles that the league can't get around. So I'm really happy that they're thinking of our safety, and they did the right thing by moving some games to later times and whatnot. And on our part, again, the way we handle that is just by taking really good care of ourselves.
So we've talked about the serious stuff. I think we might have lost JJ, so I'm going to carry on dominating the interview. I want to know about some of the stuff that you've written in your columns, because you have given us a bit of a light-hearted approach on the website. You're known for your sense of humour, and I am going to give it a plug because I'm sure you would appreciate it. You started up your own venture with Christy and Sam Mewis, Sporting Chic, and you've written some interesting articles, appeared in some interesting videos as well. We interviewed you about that. The interview is on womenssoccerzone.com. If people want to find that out, you can follow the girls on at Sporting Chic, Steph, is that right, on Twitter?
Yes, we are at Sporting Chic.
Okay, and at Sporting Chic on Twitter. You recently wrote a piece about being the most underappreciated DJ in the NWSL. Now, since you wrote that piece, has the appreciation level gone up at all?
No, I actually retired.
You retired?
Yeah.
Why?
It's hard to get right now. I retired. I said, okay, if you guys don't want to be grateful, fine. I'm done. So I'm playing. It's like kind of the thing where like I'm playing. I played hard to get, and I like gave my ultimatum, and I was expecting everyone to crawl back to me and be like, no, Steph, like please come be the DJ. But it kind of backfired on me, and like another girl, Sophia, actually picked up being the DJ, and she's like way better at it. So I just retired.
And we, in one of your other columns as well, you spoke about the babble, the babbler you described in those columns, and some of the chat that goes on in the squad. I want to know, what's the topic of conversation at the moment amongst the Red Stars roster?
Oh, boy. Where do we start? I mean, that's the thing, is that when you say what's the topic of conversation, there isn't one. And I think that's the problem, is that we just bounce around from, like, bucket to bucket about everything you could possibly think of. Like, I'm trying to think, today there was big drama with Rob Kardashian and Blac Chyna on Instagram, so I'm sure tomorrow will be that. And then tomorrow night, as we get closer to the game, it will be about the Breakers. And then after the game, God, who knows what it could be. So, again, I wish I had an answer for you about what the current topic is, because then maybe it would make us seem more normal. But we don't even know what we're talking about half the time. So that's all I can give you.
Is it tough sometimes? You know, you're spending, for a professional athlete, you know, when you're not training, you're probably having downtime and probably trying to stay in touch with family and friends and things like that. When you're with your teammates all of the time, does it get to a point sometimes where you're sat in a room and it's like awkward pauses and silence because you've run out of things to talk about?
No, I don't think our group will ever run out of things to talk about. I think, again, you know, we're human, and people, after a while, we spend a lot of time together, and sometimes, like, you just need a minute alone, or you need, like, we get sick of each other. But I think everyone, we have a group of girls with, like, who all have really good heads on their shoulders. So if someone needs, like, a minute away or, like, just some time to themselves, everyone kind of respects that and understands.
Yeah, for sure. And I'm sure that the lighthearted banter that goes on with yourself and the rest of the team kind of keeps things lighthearted, kind of helps the team when in difficult positions and maybe off the back of a loss or something like that. Is that kind of what keeps spirits up and shows the camaraderie in the side?
Yeah, I think that teams that have fun together, really like and love each other, tend to do a lot better. And I think that that's one of the reasons why we did so well in this last road trip. It was 6 days together. And for a lot of teams, it would feel like kind of just a grind, and like, maybe people would get a little snippy, but for us, I honestly had more fun with everyone as the trip went on. So, and I think that showed through in Orlando, and that's one of the reasons why we were able to dig it out, because we're a team that really, really enjoys being together.
Who is your partner in crime? Everyone has one.
I don't know. I think right now it's Sophie. Me and Sophia Huerta were roommates in Orlando, and we spend a lot of time together on and off the field, and we're funny. We're very different, but we get along really well. We have a lot of jokes, a lot of group texts, and we had a blast rooming together. I can't even begin to tell you like all of the crazy things that went on in that room. So that was fun.
Maybe off recording, Steph. Maybe off recording. Maybe not for innocent ears. Look, I'm conscious of time because I know that you're joining us in between a team meeting and training. So I'm going to let you go. We actually have an interview that JJ was able to conduct, and we have lost him. I can confirm he's gone. My iPad has died. He is no longer with us. But JJ carried out an interview recently with one of the players, as we mentioned at the start of the show, who's really tearing up the NWSL at the moment, Samantha Kerr. So, Steph, I will introduce Sam Kerr, and you and I will close the show very, very shortly. So, but here's JJ with Sky Blue FC's Sam Kerr.
All right, welcome back here to Women's Soccer Zone. JJ Duke with you. I'm delighted to be joined by one of the more informed strikers in the NWSL, and that is none other than Sky Blues' Sam Kerr. Sam, thanks for taking a few moments to chat with us.
No worries. Thanks for having me.
At time of recording right now, Sky Blue right in the mix for a spot in the playoffs. What's the atmosphere like in the team right now?
Yeah, it's good. I think we're all really excited. Obviously, we're in a good position halfway through the season, but we all know there's still a lot of work to be done. So yeah, we're excited for the rest of the season.
Last year, Sky Blue, pretty similar position in the standings, right in the mix of it up until the last few weeks of the season. Then the team fell short of the postseason. What was the biggest lesson, or some of the bigger lessons, that group learned about themselves? And, you know, now that you're in the same spot right now, how can it go about a little bit differently?
Yeah, I think we've got the team together a lot quicker. Last year we had, you know, there was people with injuries, there was people away, and we really didn't have a whole season to click. And I think this year everyone's come in at the right time, healthy. So, I think there was a lot of lessons learned last year, but it's really nice to have the whole team together and working all season long on things that we think will help us in the postseason.
Speak about the team a little bit. You said a lot of faces coming in healthy, but there are a lot of new faces to this team as well, especially loaded up through the draft. How is this group a little bit different as opposed to it once in years past?
Yeah, I think these draft classes the last 2 years have been really good. We haven't just got one or two good players. We've got four or five. I think this draft speaks itself really. We've got Kevin Sheridan, who's probably one of the best keepers in the league at the moment, playing week in, week out. And we've got people like Mandy Freeman who stand up every week. So I think they've added a lot of depth to our team and something new. You know, we're young, but we've also got old people in the team like Ma that have that experience. So I think it helps all around.
Yeah, and you're one of those players that have been really the consummate in that striking corps. Now, you've had a couple of different partners to work with. Some weeks it's Kenzie Meehan, some weeks it's Madison Tiernan, could be another one of those as well, going in as the season goes on. How has it been working with those two up front?
Yeah, it's been a lot of fun. I think they're both really good players, and it's been good. I think there's a lot of competition throughout the team for every single spot. So, it adds a different component, whether I'm playing with Maya or Mackenzie, but it's been a lot of fun, and I think we've scored a fair few goals and some goals in critical times. I think Maya scored one in the last minute. Ken's has set up a lot of goals, and I've scored some goals here there. So I think we're doing well as a three, and I think going forward it's really exciting.
Well, you've scored a fair few goals, to say, not only just this season, but in years past, so appreciate you being humble. But speak a little bit about that. You're starting to find the net more and more frequently. And one thing that I notice, this is the first year in quite a while with you playing the league that you've started out the season from day one as opposed to joining in the middle of the season. How much has that helped you?
Yeah, it's been really good. I've enjoyed it a lot. I missed the last two pre-seasons and half the season due to injury, so it's been really nice to be in with the girls and feel a little bit more a part of the team. When you're injured, you get a little bit isolated no matter what you do with the team. So it's been really nice. I've enjoyed it. It's been probably my favourite season to date, and I think we're doing really well.
Why is this being your favourite season of the bunch so far?
I think the team we've got, it's just really exciting. You can see the talent we have, and like I said, I'm injury free, so that's always a plus. But yeah, I think sometimes you look at a team and you're like, we could go far, but with this team, I know we can go far, and I know we will go really far. So it's really exciting.
And not only have you started to score more frequently, you had that big match against Portland a couple of weeks ago. This team loves playing up in Portland for some odd reason. You throw out the whole cross-country long-distance flight, but it seems almost every year that you guys get a result. Take us back through that one a little bit.
Yeah, I think, you know, you love playing in a nice stadium. You love coming up against big teams, and Portland's one of those teams that you really have to show up and play your best every time you go there. So I think we kind of step up to the challenge every time we go there. But in saying that, you know, we'd like to do that in other places a lot more. But I think it's really exciting to play in Portland. There's a huge crowd, and you know, we kind of feel like we have something to prove out there. So we love playing there. We love going there. But obviously, it's a weird one to have really good results over the past few years.
Now, not only is it a big crowd, big stadium, but it brings out the big goal celebrations. And you brought back the flip. Where has the flip been hiding?
Yeah, the flip went away when I hurt my foot last year. So obviously, having a really bad injury through my foot, it was a lot of pressure doing a flip. And I never thought I'd do it again, but you know, I felt really confident on it the last few months. My rehab went really well, and I've been playing a lot more. So, you know, I was just pumped to score and put us up 2-0. You know, getting that extra goal buffer really helped out, and I was just really pumped. And I told one of the girls before the game that if I was to score, I'd do it. So kind of had to do it, but yeah, I think it will go hiding again now.
You know, I don't have any issues with the premeditated celebrations, but for those who don't know the origins, and I actually watched this before coming on to record the interview, you go back on YouTube, the W League Grand Final from a few years ago. Can you believe already 2013? That's the last time that we saw the flip when you scored with Sydney.
Yeah, it's been a while.
But yeah, definitely for y'all listening out there, go check that out, because it was not only a wonderful goal, but a wonderful celebration. And you're talking about, you know, oddities of going out to Portland, continue getting results. But the one theme with this team this year is that you guys have been road warriors, playing 7 of your first 11 away from home. How is it mentally to travel distances and find a way to get results? Because you're playing .500 level winning percentage away from your field.
Tough, to be honest. I think we're getting to the end of that road now where we have 2 games back-to-back away, and it has been a lot of travelling, and I think by the end of this week the girls are really going to be ready for a break, and I'm going to be ready for a break. It's hard. Travelling is hard. I mean, we make no excuses for ourselves. We expect to win away, but it is kind of taking its toll. We've had also some nightmare delays. It took the girls 19 hours the other day to get home from Portland. It took us 16 to get home from Houston. So we've just had some horrible days where we spent the day in the airport or on and off planes. So it has been tough, but yeah, I think we're looking forward to playing at home and in front of our own fans and sleeping in our own bed for more than a few days.
Well, that definitely helps. So the one thing at least you could take as a consolation from spending all that time in airports and in flight is that being around your group, and you've spoken so passionately about this team. And what can we really expect from Sky Blue going forward for the rest of the season?
Yeah, I think exciting football. We like to play quick, fast football, but yeah, we like to play possession-based football. So hopefully you can expect a lot of wins, and I think we're only getting stronger and fitter. So hopefully it's all up from here. And like I said, we have lots of home games coming up. So I think we should do really well in the back end of the season.
For sure. And kind of switching gears a little bit, because coming up in a few weeks' time, the NWSL will be taking a small breather, but half of that is because of the Euros, and half of that is because of this Tournament of Nations competition coming up, where the United States is hosting your team, Australia, as well as Brazil and Japan in the West Coast. How much are you looking forward to that competition?
A while since we've played the US, and it's always nice to play the top team in the world. So we've never beat them, so we love playing them. It's a challenge every time. And then obviously Brazil, Japan are 2 nations that we've played a lot, but are always great battles. So I think it's going to be really beneficial for us, and it's exciting to see the girls again and be on the same team as some of my Aussie teammates.
And then this is going to be a tournament playing out on the West Coast, so a couple of new venues to look forward to. But I think the one game that a lot of people will be looking forward to is the rematch of the quarterfinals in Rio, where your team, in heartbreaking fashion, dropped the penalty kick shootout to Brazil. How much is that game? I know it's going to be deemed a friendly, or at least a friendly tournament, but is there going to be a little extra motivation for that one?
I guess you could say that, but we've always had a really big rivalry with Brazil, and we've played them a lot in the last year. I think we've played them 3 or 4 times, so we're always looking to beat them, but I guess you could say we have something to prove after the Olympics.
So the one thing that it's been exciting to watch from your team over the past few years is really the growth, that core that started back, I guess, even prior to the Germany World Cup in 2011. Now everybody's really come of age. They've been together for a long time now. What can we expect out of the Matildas coming into the next cycle? Because obviously with the World Cup in France, we have an Olympics, and also there'll be Asian qualifiers and Asian Cup games. So there's a lot to come for this team.
Yeah, I think, I've said it before, we're over being the dark horse. We want to go to places now and be favourites and win tournaments and get medals. So I think you'll see us really mature our play, matured a lot, and everyone's a lot older and stronger and quicker and faster. So I think you'll really see us move up in that world ranking and move up in where we finish in tournaments. And, you know, now we're going to be really disappointed. We are anyway, but more so now because we're all at that perfect age to really win and really compete at the top level.
How is it in a mental stage to kind of shrug off, you said, that dark horse mentality? Does your group really feel right now that you can not walk into a tournament, but enter in a tournament and feel like you can win it, not just happy to be there?
Yeah, I think we did at the last World Cup, we did at the Olympics, and we obviously fell a little bit short and maybe still had some growing to do, but we're really confident in our team, and we will definitely go in thinking we can win the next few tournaments.
And stepping aside from the national team, but into the club game back home, recently you flew back to accept the Julie Dolan medal as the W League Player of the Year. What was that experience like, and when you found out that you were going to be winning that award?
Yeah, it was obviously a very humbling experience. I've never won that award or never really won a senior award in Australia, so it was nice, but I mean, we had such a great year as a club, and it would be wrong of me to just take all the credit. So I think my glory team at home, I've said it a million times, that award was shared between us because every single player put in so much and gave up so much to be there and have that much impact on the season. So I think although it is very humbling to win those types of awards, I think it is a very much so team award.
And you said that was your first real major senior award. You're a player right now that's in fine form across both of your clubs, and really you're still, just starting to even hit that peak, maybe even a few years away from that. How much fun has the club game and the international game been for you over the last couple of years?
Yeah, it's been really tough because I've had a lot of injuries, so last year with Glory was the first year that I've kind of just said, I'm going to go out there and I'm going to have fun and go back to why I started loving the game, and that was because of love and fun, I guess, with the game. So I really enjoyed the last year, I guess, but the 2 years before that, obviously it was very mentally tough with all the injuries, but it's all worth it in the long run when, you get to playing grand finals and be a part of such great teams like this. It's fabulous.
For sure. Well, Sam, we wish you all the best luck and health in the season coming to, the back end of it. And hopefully, for your sake, we see Sky Blue make a push for the postseason and see you play on the big stage here in the U.S.
For sure. Thank you very much for having me.
Women's Soccer Zone. It's all about the players.
So that was Sam Kerr talking to JJ, obviously performing very well in the NWSL. And that brings an end to our 50th edition of Women's Soccer Zone. As I said, JJ, unfortunately, I'll have to try and get him back at some time so that he can close the show. But Steph, I can't really think of many better people to close the show with anyway. So look, I've lost JJ, but I've got you. So as far as I'm concerned, I win either way.
Yeah, I hope so.
Well, look, good luck against Boston. A lot of people will be listening to this after the game has taken place. But thank you very much for joining us. Keep an eye on womenssoccerzone.com. Of course, Steph will be continuing to write for us throughout the NWSL season. Keep following the Chicago Red Stars and all the other NWSL sides on nwslsoccer.com and the Go 90 app, which we don't get in the UK. And by the sounds of it, it's probably a good thing because I know there's been some problems with it. But if you want to follow us on Twitter, you can do on @WosoZone. And we're on email on wosozone@gmail.com. We will be back during those Euros. Take care of yourselves and bye-bye. We'll be right back.